And with that he turned on his heel and rejoined the other two. They spoke together for a little, and though none of them started or raised his voice, or so much as whistled, it was plain enough that Dr. Livesey had communicated my request, for the next thing that I heard was the captain giving an order to Joe Banderson, and all hands were piped on deck. "My lads," said Captain Smollett, "I've a word to say to you. This land that we have sighted is the place we have been sailing to. Mr. Trelawney, being a very open-handed gentleman, as we all know, has just asked me a word or two, and as I was able to tell him that every man on board had done his duty, why, he and I and the doctor are going below to the cabin to drink your health and luck, and you'll have grog served out for you to drink our health and luck. I'll tell you what I think of this. I think it handsome. And if you think as I do, you'll give a good sea cheer for the gentleman that does it." The cheer followed. That was a matter of course, but it rang out so full and hearty that I confess I could hardly believe these same men were plotting for our blood. "One more cheer for Captain Smollett," cried Long John, when the first had subsided, and this also was given with a will. At that the three gentlemen went below, and not long after word was sent forward that Jim Hawkins was wanted in the cabin. I found them all three seated round the table, a bottle of Spanish wine and some raisins before them, and the doctor smoking away with his wig on his lap, and that, I knew, was a sign that he was agitated. The stern window was open, for it was a warm night, and you could see the moon shining behind on the ship's wake. "Now, Hawkins," said the squire, "you have something to say. Speak up." I did as I was bid, and, as short as I could make it, told the whole details of Silver's conversation. Nobody interrupted me till I was done, nor did any one of the three of them make so much as a movement, but they kept their eyes upon my face from first to last. "Jim," said Dr. Livesey, "take a seat." And they made me sit down at the table beside them, poured me out a glass of wine, filled my hands with raisins, and all three, one after the other, and each with a bow, drank my good health and their service to me for my luck and courage. "Now, Captain," said the squire, "you were right, and I was wrong." "No more than I," said the captain. "I never heard of a crew that meant to mutiny but what showed signs before, for any man that had an eye in his head to see the mischief and take steps according. But this crew," he added, "beats me." "Captain," said the doctor, "with your permission, that's Silver, a very remarkable man." "He'd look remarkably well from a yardarm, sir," returned the captain. "But this is talk. This don't lead to anything. I see three or four points, and with Mr. Trelawney's permission, I'll name them." "You, sir, are the captain. It is for you to speak," says Mr. Trelawney, grandly. "First point," began Mr. Smollett. "We must go on, because we can't turn back. If I gave the word to go about, they would rise at once. Second point, we have time before us, at least until this treasure's found. Third point, there are faithful hands. Now, sir, it's got to come to blows sooner or later, and what I propose is to take time by the forelock, as the saying is, and come to blows some fine day when they least expect it. We can count, I take it, on your own home servants, Mr. Trelawney." "As upon myself," declared the squire. "Three," reckoned the captain. "Ourselves make seven, counting Hawkins here. Now about the honest hands." "Most likely Trelawney's own men," said the doctor. "Those he had picked up for himself before he lit on Silver." "Nay," replied the squire, "Hands was one of mine." "I did think I could have trusted Hands," added the captain. "And to think that they're all Englishmen," broke out the squire. "Sir, I could find it in my heart to blow the ship up." "Well, gentlemen," said the captain, "the best that I can say is not much. We must lay to, if you please, and keep a bright lookout. It's trying on a man, I know. It would be pleasanter to come to blows, but there's no help for it till we know our men. Lay to and whistle for a wind, that's my view." "Jim here," said the doctor, "can help us more than anyone. The men are not shy with him, and Jim is a noticing lad." "Hawkins, I put prodigious faith in you," added the squire. I began to feel pretty desperate at this, for I felt altogether helpless. And yet, by an odd train of circumstances, it was indeed through me that safety came. In the meantime, talk as we pleased. There were only seven out of the 26 on whom we knew we could rely. and out of these seven, one was a boy, so that the grown men on our side were 6 to their 19.